Get your fill of baseball news and beer reviews at foulballarea.com. Follow our blog for the latest news around the baseball world and read about some of our favorite ballpark beers. Tune into the podcast every Wednesday as we take a deep dive into the topics of the day. Stay connected by signing up for our mailing list or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at foulballarea. Now, here's today's episode of the Foulball Area Podcast with Matthew Atkins and Trey Lyle. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of the Foulball Area Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins. Pleased to be joined by my co-host, Trey Lyle, coming to us all the way from Kansas via Zoom. Once again, Trey, how are you doing this week?
Doing good, Matt. Another exciting guest here to give us some great insight. Probably someone who knows more baseball than me, at least, and actually, you know, played it in high school. So excited for to have a fun guest on and excited for another episode of the Foul Ball Area.
Yeah, it should be a good episode. We have a very special guest today. You know, Trey, we should actually just get the Virginia Tech Comm Department to sponsor our podcast because we've had Brady Hess, David Cunningham, Bailey Engel, Evan Hughes, and now Corey Van Dyke joining us on the podcast today. Corey, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks, you guys, for reaching out to me and letting me come on. I always love to talk some baseball. Even if we don't have any going on right now, there still is some exciting news going on in baseball, so happy to take some time and talk about it.
Yeah, there's been a lot of news, a lot of drama around the baseball world over the past couple weeks, but we did have one big and fun event a couple weeks ago, the MLB draft, and you know a little bit about that. You wrote for A Perfect Game last summer, so you were interacting with and talking to a lot of high school prospects and a lot of really talented players. So just tell us a little bit about some of the players that were drafted that you got to know last summer.
Yeah, so I guess first off, just going into Perfect Game and what they do a little bit. So Perfect Game is the big showcase organization that puts on all these tournaments and events for these top-ranked players. So I got to see or at least talk to a few of them throughout the summer, specifically the ones that were local in the area I was in the Atlanta area. One guy in particular that I probably saw the most of any of them is Jordan Walker. He was selected in the first round by the Cardinals, a 6'5", third baseman, really a guy that you look at him and his upside is, you know, through the roof as a guy who's just turning, I think, 18 years old, something like that. So I think he's a guy that really stands out for me as a guy I got to see a lot this summer. Another guy, interestingly enough, is Nick Bisco. He was selected in the first round by the Rays. And he's a guy, you look at him, he was, so this past year, this past summer in Georgia, he was playing for the 16U team because he was only 16 years old. He reclassified to the senior class this year, and then all of a sudden he's getting drafted in the first round. And he was actually a UVA commit, so kind of glad for our sake as Hokies that he's not going to be terrorizing us in the ACC instead. He'll be working up the Rays organization. He was a guy that was 16 years old. He was already throwing 96. So,
jeez,
you gotta be, you know, crazy to be doing that at that young age. And really, he has the potential there. Another guy I didn't get to see play, but got to talk to him and do a feature article on him was Ed Howard, the shortstop that got selected by the Cubs in the first round. And he's really a guy that his actually reputation kind of precedes himself because he was a guy that played for that Jackie Robinson West Little League team that went to the U.S. or won the U.S. region and went all the way to the finals. I believe ended up losing to,
I think it was South Korea.
South Korea.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure South Korea.
So he was a guy that played on that team. That team, of course, they had a little scandal afterwards, but in that brief run they had, their popularity was through the roof. He was a guy that, you know, came up through the ranks, a smooth shortstop, probably one of the better defensive players in this draft, and really I think they looked at him the best prospect at shortstop coming in this year. Got to talk to him. He was a guy that ended up getting drafted by a hometown team. He's from the Chicago area, right outside of there, even though he was a White Sox fan and a Tim Anderson fan, he gets drafted by the other team, the Cubs. But really excited for him. He was really just a really down-to-earth guy, a guy that you could tell has a bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, and the Cubs needed a shortstop, obviously. Addison, the whole situation around Addison Russell, and now he's left the organization, oddly enough, signing with the KBO recently. But that was definitely a position of need for the Cubs. But you kind of touched on the Rays. Obviously, the most notable draft pick for Virginia Tech, which you work for Tech Sideline covering baseball for at least 2 years, I believe. I think this would have been, what, year three if we had a season?
Yeah, so I've done baseball all 4 years. Football 2 years and baseball all four. So,
yeah, and then it was obviously Ian Seymour, who Matt and I kind of got to talk about pre-draft. He goes in the second round to the Rays, so a little bit early than what people expected. But this was a guy who really had a summer where he kind of turned a corner, found his four-seam fastball, and I argue that if they had a season, his stock would have been through the roof, and you could argue that he might have been a first-round pick. What are your thoughts about Ian and just going early like he did to the Rays?
Yeah, I think it's a great spot for Seymour, and I had a conversation with him the other week to do an article for Tech Sideline on him, and he was talking about he's super excited for being in the Rays organization, just how there's such an analytical organization, such an organization that puts a precedent on that. And even Virginia Tech this past year had hired Kyle Sarazen to come in and do a lot of that work with Seymour, and that really kind of, I think, elevated his game a little bit. And you really saw it come out this year where he had like 17.9, I think, strikeouts per nine innings he was averaging this year in the four or five starts that he had. And he was just unhittable through, you know, those first couple weeks that the season did last. So I think, like you said, his draft stock, I feel like, would have even improved even more if they had the whole season. You could have continually seen how he would just be shutting down these ACC bats like he did in that the first ACC series against Georgia Tech, where he struck out 14 guys in six innings. So I think you looked at Seymour. He always had that changeup, but like you said, the ability to add a little extra oomph on his fastball with some velocity, switching to a four-seam, and then just the continued development of the cutter to go along with that, as well as a breaking pitch that's kind of still developing. So a four-pitch pitcher, really a guy that I think will be in a good position with the Rays and can move on up in that organization.
Ian Seymour was definitely not a surprise that he got drafted, but Carson Taylor was probably a shock for many people going to the Dodgers, I believe, in the fourth round, off the top of my head. And so what about Carson that kind of surprised a couple teams where he went in that fourth round?
Yeah, so Carson, he was a draft-eligible sophomore, which I know there was kind of – he was kind of on that fringe of will he get drafted, will he not. He ends up going in the fourth round, and he's a guy that – I think you looked at him this year and he just mashed the entire year long, ended up like over batting over 400. His on base percentage was insane. His OPS was insane. And he's a guy that I think you looked at him and what he was going to continue to do in the ACC as well. He's another guy that, you know, probably with that shortened season hadn't built up the resume quite as much as he would have liked, but still was able to get drafted with what he put up. And he's really a guy too, where, has battled through some adversity. I talked to him again too in that same time frame that I talked to Seymour last week, and just this whole thing of him, he broke his hamate bone in like his wrist like area at the end of his freshman season, and then like right away went into the Cape Cod League in the summer, started out, I think he said 0-14, just because that was his first action. And if you go into the Cape Cod League where the best college players are playing, you're going to be in trouble if that's your first action in a couple of months. And I started 0-14, but just started to bounce back and watched. What's the guy's name? The guy that got drafted by the Yankees. You might know Trey off the top of your head since.
Oh, I would have to look it up.
Austin Wells, the catcher from Arizona. He was actually the team's starting catcher. And Taylor said he just kind of watched him, modeled his game after him a little bit. That guy ends up going up in the first round. Taylor ends up going in the fourth round, so it's a good guy to model your game after and kind of take example after. And like I said, he just then comes back after that moment, after a little bit of a struggle during that season in the Cape Cod summer, and then comes back in the spring with Virginia Tech and just mashes that entire spring. So happy for him, and the Dodgers, I think, landed a great prospect there.
Another cool thing about Seymour going to the Rays is the GM, Eric Neander, a Virginia Tech graduate. So that's pretty cool that two Virginia Tech graduates in the Rays organization now. What do you think this does for the Virginia Tech program? I mean, it's one of the best, even though it was a shortened draft, it's the first time they've ever had two players drafted in the first four rounds of one draft. So that's pretty big for the program. How do you think this changes things or helps them grow down in Blacksburg?
Yeah, and I think, you know, ever since John Scheff has taken over, this would have been his third year if he completed all the way through, so he'll be going into his fourth year. He's had that mantra build it in Blacksburg, and this is really, I think, the start of us kind of getting to see that come to fruition a little bit of what he's been building. To have two guys drafted in the top four rounds, I think I'd look, there was only three there. Virginia Tech was one of four ACC programs I had, and you know the ACC is stocked with, you know, power arms, yeah, power bats, all kinds of different players. So the fact that they were one of four teams that were able to do that shows just how I guess what Scheff is building here is coming true. And he had even talked about it too. He's always talked about it, how, you know, you always have to have a couple of years to really get the groundwork going and to really build it up. And now I think we'll start to see, you know, this come, you know, even more. And really, I think you look at it too, Virginia Tech would have had a lot more guys drafted if it wasn't, you know, just the five rounds that it was this year. I think they would have had a few more guys even drafted. Say if it was 10 rounds, they would have probably had Zach Brixia, their closer who throws in the upper 90s. They would have had Peyton Alford, a left-handed reliever out of the bullpen who's really shown some promise. Kevin Madden, a third baseman, who was, as a freshman last year, pretty much was the team's best hitter for most of the year. So I think you looked at, you know, what Scheff is building there, what he has in place, and there's nothing but potential going forward for the Hokies.
What do you think about the five-round draft? Obviously, there was a lot of quote-unquote money-saving going on by the major league owners, the reason they came with the five-round draft. Did you like it? Did you think it should have been more rounds? I heard like 10 rounds basically would have cost the owners $1 million more if they added five more rounds. So what did you think about just the format of this very unique draft?
Yeah, I mean, everyone was kind of put into a tough situation with it and just how it was all kind of gathered together last minute. And like you said, the different financial burdens that it was being placed and whatnot. But I mean, I think all of it does kind of go back to, you know, you feel sorry for some of these guys, these college players that would have been drafted in, you know, say rounds even like 6 through 10 and that they just missed out. Those are the guys that it really falls on the most. So I don't know. I would have liked to see it. I think we all would have liked to see it more rounds, just to see the names being called. But it also does provide an opportunity for college baseball where you'll have some of the best names coming back next year to play again. You'll have also some of the best high school guys that would have been, you know, potentially if – I know I saw a few guys that even took their names out of consideration for the draft, high schoolers. When they heard that it was a shortened draft because they just wanted to do it that way and said they want to go to college now. So you'll have a bigger crop of talent in college baseball next year, which I think will be really interesting. It might be, you know, some of the best talent we've seen in that sport. So, you know, there's arguments both ways. I think I would have personally, like you said, like to see maybe 10 rounds, maybe see some of those other guys live out that dream. But there's always, you know, next year, if nothing gets in the way of what the potential and the talent that they have there. So
I just had to look this up because I couldn't remember his name, but there was actually JD Mundy, who used to play at Virginia Tech and transferred to Radford. He signed with the Orioles. So really three guys that have been at Virginia Tech ended up going pro after this season. So that's good for the Hokies. Going back to your year with Perfect Game last summer, I looked through a few of your articles that you had posted on Twitter during the MLB draft, and it looked like two guys had actually been drafted by their local teams. It was Ed Howard in Chicago and then Kyle Harrison for the San Francisco Giants. So that's pretty cool to get drafted by your hometown team.
Yeah, and Kyle Harrison, he's another cool guy. I didn't get to personally see him play, but had a phone conversation with him and his dad. And just a really cool story about a kid who's grown up on the West Coast his whole life and was committed to UCLA. I believe he'll sign with the Giants, though. And even just a funny story about that, how he you know, when he was young and playing, he was throwing right-handed because that was just a natural thing that his dad thought. He had bought him a glove to put on his left hand, and his son was like, didn't look that athletic out on the field, and he knew his son was athletic. He's like, what is going on out there? And realized that he was actually a left-hander. All these years later, he's throwing 94, 95 as a lefty and with a wipeout slider. So cool story there. And another guy that you see, like you said, with a hometown connection, grew up De La Salle High School, which is one of the premier even programs across the country in baseball, 45 minutes or so away from San Francisco. So he'll be in that organization. And as a San Francisco Giants fan myself, I'm excited for that, excited to see an influx of pitching talent, because that's what we really need right now, with some guys going off like Bumgarner now out of the system and stuff like that. So excited for the future that Kyle Harrison holds there.
And you could see him in Richmond before you know it.
So, yeah, exactly.
Obviously, with the Richmond Flying Squirrels being a Giants AA affiliate out of Richmond, by one of my former employers, working there for a summer. So pretty interesting to see. But also good news, moving on from the draft. Matt, Corey, we're going to have baseball, I think, at this point. So a 60-game season starting July 24th, and then if the players agree to the health and safety, they'll report July 1 for quote-unquote spring training in the summer.
Yeah, I hope it happens. You know, 60-game season's not exactly what we had hoped for, but, it's baseball. I'm just worried that, you know, it's going to be tough to say whether everything's legit in just 60 games. I mean, take the Washington Nationals last year, for example. They wouldn't have made the playoffs in a 60-game season. They went on to win the World Series. So it's definitely going to be interesting. Corey, how do you feel about the Giants' chances in a 60-game season?
It definitely increases their chances as opposed to, you know, 162-game season. Because I think I read Andrew Baggerly a lot. He's the beat writer for the Giants in The Athletic. And him and Grant Bisbee are two guys in there. I think they had an article where they were talking about how it was either last year or one of the years where Giants were just terrible. They're 60 games into the season, they would have been 32-28 and would have been like one game out of the wild card or something like that, which just shows how, you know, you can have a bad team and still put up decent numbers to be in competition, you know, in a 60-game season. So I think, you know, a 60-game season, it really, you know, does give an advantage to those more mediocre teams that are going to be fighting for those last playoff spots, as opposed to, you know, a team like the Dodgers, who's going to be perennial, you know, atop the NL, a team like the Yankees, who's going to be perennial atop the AL, stuff like that. So it definitely, I don't know, it brings kind of attention away from that, which is kind of disappointing. But like you said, we just want baseball at this point. So that's what I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah, other interesting notes about it, it's going to be the full prorated salary, which works out to about 37% of the player's salary. Self-imposed cutoff for the regular season, so why they picked 60 games, it's going to be September 27th. And then probably the two biggest notes is, one, they're not changing the playoff format, so it's going to be 10 teams, which I was actually kind of shocked about. I thought they wanted to do an expanded playoff, trying to earn a little bit more money. But the big thing, and I think it's something that now is just going to happen in baseball, is we're going to have a universal DH in the AL and the NL. And I think with the way the CBA negotiations line up, I think that's just going to be a change that happens. I think we're not going to see a pitcher, unless it's a mad bum situation where he used to pinch hit for the Giants, in baseball again, or at least in the major leagues.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I'm not a fan of the universal DH, and I wish that they wouldn't go that way, but I know it's something that it was going to happen eventually, and so might as well just get it over with, I guess.
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines. I don't really like it as much, because you miss out on, you know, the memes of Bartolo Colon swinging at the plate and different things like that. So, I mean, I think it even provides more strategy into the game, too, where, you know, you have to have, you know, bunting here. You have to have, you know, do I need to take this pitcher out right now for a pinch hitter? And do I need to bring in someone else, even if it's the fifth inning or something like that, and the pitcher's cruising? So it does, I don't know, limit the need for managers and strategy that might be there. But like you said, Matt, I think we could all kind of see it coming, even if we may not like it as much.
It's also something that, you know, Trey, you're a Yankees fan there in the AL. They already have a DH. They plan for this. Corey and I being Braves and Giants fans, they're in the NL. They weren't planning on having a DH this year, so it kind of puts them at a disadvantage because they fill out their roster not planning for that. And so they have to now figure out who's going to be their DH, how they're going to get that into the lineup. And also there's, you know, a couple of free agents still out there that team could grab and try to put into their lineup to solve this problem. Yasiel Puig is still a free agent somehow. I'm surprised no one signed him yet, but I think the transaction freeze will lift here in the next day or so, and then maybe someone will pick him up, try to fit him into the lineup as a DH this year.
And the good news about a DH, and especially you sign a guy like Yasiel Puig, he doesn't really need much time to get adjusted to how your system and how you want to work shifts and that, like that sort of stuff. Because he's a solid outfielder. I mean, obviously, you get Puig the bat first, and so I think you'll see a team that thinks they can win. So like, I don't think the Dodgers will need a DH because they already have a loaded lineup and a loaded bench. But the Braves, who might need a DH, I could see them signing a guy like Yasiel Puig, a team like I would think on the lines of like a contending, maybe the Diamondbacks are trying to contend a little bit, maybe get that wild card spot. I'm trying to think of teams that have, the Cardinals could be another one. One of those teams that either can win their division or have a really good shot at getting to the wild card are going to look for the Puigs of the world. I think Jose Bautista has not been signed yet off the top of my head. Unless he retired, that could be one, because I think he showed points at which he still has his bat, and you never know. But I kind of like the 60-game season just in this instance, because you're going to get high-level baseball in terms of intensity from beginning to end. And I mentioned this during my radio broadcast today, is the reason the NFL is the NFL is because they have such a short season where every game means a lot. In a 162-game season, you can lose two or three games, and they really won't matter in the long run. Let's be honest about that. So this 60-game sprint, while I don't think it's not a full season, it will not give you the full picture, every game is going to mean 10 times more than it ever has, and the intensity should be pretty interesting for this. I just call it a sprint to the finish.
Yeah, that's a good point. I haven't really even thought about it that way, but it will kind of, like you said, bring out the best in these guys. And hopefully, you know, there's no load management or anything like that. Even though that's never really been a huge problem in baseball, but with just 60 games, you hope these guys just stick it out and just put out, you know, the best product available through those 60 games. And we see just a competitive down the stretch type deal with, like you said, every game mattering so much at that point.
So we've talked about Madison Bumgarner a little bit. You mentioned him a couple of times. And a story that I think didn't get enough attention was the whole Mason Saunders thing when that came out this offseason. And obviously he's left the Giants. He signed with the Diamondbacks. But then this whole like alter ego rodeo life story came out. What did you think about that, knowing that your star pitcher for your team for a decade has been secretly competing in rodeos the whole time?
Yeah, it was kind of funny when that first came out. I remember seeing the story reported by Andrew Bagley of The Athletic and just reading through that. And, you know, that's just who Madison Bumgarner is. He's this kind of mysterious superstar of a team where he's a really secretive guy, not a very outspoken, just ultra competitive type guy. And I think, you know, he gets done with baseball and in the off season, he's still needed to have those competitive juices flowing, and rodeo is where he ended up finding that. But, you know, it was, I guess he probably was hiding that from the Giants, because I don't think there's any way they would allow him to be out there doing that. And even just knowing how, you know, he had ruined one of his seasons previously in a dirt bike accident and stuff like that. So, you know, it is, you know, I guess, kind of concerning that your star player could be out there doing that and you have no clue. But it also is kind of funny to just look back on when, you know, you look back on and see no injuries did happen or anything, and that wow, he did have this other thing where he was winning these rodeo titles and stuff like that, and how that one place that tweeted out the photo on Facebook and everyone started seeing that was kind of the downfall of all of that. But pretty cool to kind of see a funny story like that, like you said, to kind of bring the lighter side of baseball, I guess you could say.
So if we get a Yankees-Dodgers World Series this year, which most people probably would say objectively would have been the best two teams going in if we had a normal season. Do you feel that the 60 games still proved who were the best two teams of baseball?
That's a good question. I don't know. I've kind of gone back and forth on that thinking. I guess when you put it in that scenario where it is, like we said, kind of the two, you know, blue buds even of baseball and the two powerhouse teams that we kind of see going into the season, I don't think you can, you know, take away from that and take away from the work that they did. Because, like you said, the playoffs are still – they're still going to be completely normal, right? With the NL and ALDS being best of five, and then the CS and then the World Series being best of seven, correct?
Yeah, so it'll be the wild card game, and then you have the ALDS best of five and then the two best of sevens, which will prove who's the better team over a long span. I think what's going to happen, honestly, is that we're going to have probably the team you probably expect to win the division is going to win the division. Like the Astros are going to win the West, the Yankees are going to win the East, just because the Red Sox did take a step back this year. Then you'll have the AL Central, probably the Twins. They kind of didn't really lose much, but that could be interesting. And then the NL West will probably go to the Dodgers and so on and so forth. And then those two wild card teams, I think, is where you're going to get a lot more of fluctuation between teams that you might not expect to make the playoffs this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you could certainly even, I don't know, I wouldn't count out the Rays on the East. They've continually built up that team and they have a bunch of young talent there. And I don't know. So there's, you know, there, like you said, there's a lot of different teams that could end up, you know, competing for the wild cards and even divisions too, where, like you said, all 60 games matter now at this point, and you really can't take one off and say, oh, we'll get them the next time. It really does matter, because the difference between a team going, you know, 35 and 25 as opposed to 34 and 26 could be the difference between getting in and getting out in such a shortened schedule. So it really should bring, I guess, more added intrigue from that perspective.
I think another thing that kind of, when I was thinking out why the universal DH is I'm kind of okay with it, or maybe even for it, just in this kind of scenario, is that pitching is just going to be like 10 times more important in a 60 game season, where you're not, like, pitchers are going to have a lot more shorter of a leash because every game's so much more important, and the pitchers need to be protected as much as they can. So you can't really send a pitcher out to go hit. Like, you just can't. Especially, it's such an advantage for the AL to not have their pitchers hit, just because they're going to protect them half the time compared to when the NL pitchers are exposed. It makes a lot more sense in the 60 game season for me personally than it would be for a whole season. But at this point, it's going to happen, and it's kind of with change, you kind of just got to accept it at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's something they've wanted to implement for a while, and so this year's just the perfect time to start it, and then they're just going to keep it going. Corey, one more for you before we let you go. We recently wrapped up our blog series where we take a look at the best season that each team has ever had in Major League Baseball. If you had to pick one Giants season out of their entire history as the best they've ever had, which would it be?
It's a tough question.
And they've been around for a while, so yeah, that is a tough
yeah.
one.
Yeah, I'm going to stick to eras that I know the best. Which would be, I'll choose from one of the three World Series that I've gotten to experience myself. I don't know, that's such a hard question, because you could make an argument for either of those four or the three teams that won a World Series, 2010, 2012, and 2014. But I'm going to say actually the 2012 season was my favorite, and I think the best team. That was really when, you know, you had still Matt Cain as the head of that rotation. You had Madison Bumgarner, who was establishing himself as, you know, the guy who's getting ready to take over him. You had Buster Posey had his MVP season that year. You had guys like Pablo Sandoval and Hunter Pence in the middle of that lineup that provided an extra boost for them. So I think that was the team that kind of sticks out to me, and just the run that they had as well. That season, they go down 0-2 to the Reds in the NL NLDS, and then win three straight in that one on the road at the Reds. They then win three straight after going down 3-1 to the Cardinals, and then they sweep the Tigers, a team that everyone picks the Tigers in that World Series with Miguel Cabrera and just all that they had on that team. So I really think that 2012 Giants team is the one that kind of sticks out in my memory the most, and just all that they had there. And even a guy like Tim Lincecum coming out of the bullpen that season, and he didn't quite have the stuff that he had in 2010, but that postseason when he came out of the bullpen, he had some of his freakish tendencies show back up again. So that team kind of, I think, really sticks out in my memory the most.
All right, so we're recording this on Tuesday, as we do most times. And so the last one was the Houston Astros. And so I got tasked with the AL teams, and I had to luckily save the Houston Astros for last. I picked the 2017 Houston Astros as their best season because it was their only World Series championship. So if you were a Houston Astros fan and I came up to you and said, what was their best season? Would you pick another season or would you pick 2017?
I mean, that's probably, you would have to make the argument that probably is their best season. The only other one that kind of sticks out to me is when, what year was that? When they had
2005 is when they went to the World Series in the NL. I think they're the only team to ever win a pennant on both the NL and the AL because they're the only team that's really moved. Maybe the Cubs technically, because the Cubs were in the American League when the league was first founded. So I think that would be the other one off the top of my head.
If it was me doing the Astros, I probably would have picked 2019. They had more wins than in 2017. They made the World Series again, and there was no evidence of cheating. So I'd probably go with 2019. But see, we have different philosophies on this. Your thing, you say rings matter, which they do. But when I consider a best team, I'm looking at like the product on the field, because playoffs can be so random. Like anything can happen. So
not
I like looking at the entire season. Looking at regular season wins, the players that are on that team, awards that they won. So for the Giants, I actually chose 1962. They won 103 games. They had Willie Mays, Orlando Cepeda, Willie McCovey. They lost in the World Series, but they made it there. And they won the NL pennant. So I went with 62 for the Giants. But I did consider the three championship teams this decade.
But in 2017, they had the MVP. And in 2019, they didn't. Because Mike Trout didn't play. Let's be real here. They had Jose Altuve. Aaron Judge should have been the MVP. But otherwise, actually, no. Altuve was a deserving MVP. And they led the league in runs, batting average, on-base percentage, and slugging. And they also had Justin Verlander at the end, who was 5-0 with a 1.09 ERA. So, I would probably take the 2019 pitching staff because they had Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander. But 2017's lineup, and they won it. Like, they didn't lose the World Series, and they both went to a game seven. And you could argue that Dodgers team in 17 was better than the Nationals team this year.
Yeah, you could. No, I mean, they're both good answers. That's just the one I would have gone with.
And you didn't think they were stealing signs in 2019. You're crazy. So if you're real here, I'm just saying. They just got better not getting caught, all right?
All right, Corey, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week, talking to us about the draft and Virginia Tech and everything else going on in baseball. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for reaching out to me, guys. I had a blast getting to talk baseball with you guys.
Great to hear from you, CBD.
All right, thanks again to Corey Van Dyke joining us on this week's episode of the podcast. We really appreciate his insight on the MLB draft and everything else going on around Major League Baseball and college baseball and high school baseball, all levels of baseball. He's a very knowledgeable baseball guy, so appreciate him joining us this week on the podcast. Like we said, we did just wrap up our Best Seasons blog series. Trey put out the Astros season yesterday on the blog, so make sure to check that out if you haven't already. But we're not done yet, because now it's time for you guys to pick the best season of all time. The Best Seasons bracket goes live tomorrow morning, and you guys can pick who had the best season of all time. We split it up into the NL and the AL, and there will be 5 rounds until we get down to the best team season in Major League Baseball history. So this is going to be fun. I hope you guys will take the time to vote in this bracket and choose the best team in MLB history. It's going to be a fun time.
How can they vote, Matt?
They can vote at foulballarea.com. The post will be up tomorrow morning, and I'm not exactly sure. I think we're going to do 2 days for each round. So you'll have 2 days to get your vote in each time that there is a new round, and we'll put an updated bracket up with each round. So it'll be a fun time, and the winner gets to go down in history and be glorified as the best team of all time.
Yes, and if you want to follow us, you can follow me at Trey Lyle, and then him at Matkins21. Also, Corey, if you want to follow him, he posts about baseball all the time at CoreyV9 on the Twitter sphere. So make sure you check us out on social media. We'll retweet probably everything coming from the Foul Ball area website as well as the Twitter page. So make sure you go vote for the bracket. Hint, pick the 1927 Yankees.
They are the one seed.
Yeah, and they're also considered Tom Verducci's best team ever. So that's kind of why I had to pick them. Not because I'm a Yankees fan. I just, you know, Tom Verducci, one of the best writers in baseball, said they're the best team ever. Just putting that out there.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Foul Ball Area Podcast. Trey, I hope you have a good rest of your week. Same goes to all of you listeners out there. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Foul Ball Area Podcast. Make sure to leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe so you get new episodes as soon as they come out.